Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Welcome to our super special year-end special. We're sharing our favorite television shows that depict everything from haunted houses to perfume-obsessed assassins. We're traveling from Castle Rock, Maine, all the way down to Atlanta and beyond to bring you the shows that sit on the very top of the TV peak.
Plus, we're discussing the very best music of the year, the best albums, and we'll each name our song of the year.
It's happening right about now on Inside Pop.
Hey, y'all, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are your deep dive inside the best pop culture of the year. Welcome to our 2018 year-end TV and music special.
We're packing it all into one episode, guys. But before we get into our list, quick request. If you are an Apple Podcast or iTunes user, or if you're on Stitcher or Spotify or Overcast, just head over, subscribe, download our episodes. We really appreciate it. And specifically, if you're on iTunes, we'd love it if you'd leave us a little rating and review. Thank you so much.
All right, let's get to it. We're going to talk about our favorite television. First up on this special, 2018 was a very interesting year for TV. I think it's going to go down as the year that had the most original programming ever until 2019. And I can make every listener one promise. You have not seen everything that's worth seeing. It's just not possible. So the question I have for you is, what do you make of all of this quantity? Do you think that all the additional quantity equals additional quality?
I think that's a trick question.
Because
there's so much quantity, I have no idea, because there is so much that has come out that I was not able to see. But from what I've been hearing and what I've talked to friends and, you know, read blogs about and articles, there is a plethora of really quality prestige television shows out there. And it's you know, staying the course that we've been having for the last few years. I think what is overwhelming is that with platforms like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon really bringing it in the last couple of years with quality programming, now anything else that they bring, people have an expectation that it's great. And I think sometimes maybe they fall a little flat. But because it's inherently like, oh my God, it's a Netflix show, or oh wow, it's a new Hulu show, I think there's this inherent thought that it's going to be fabulous, but sometimes it doesn't end up that way.
Yeah, I think we're demanding, or we're expecting, A-plus television across the board. And sometimes Netflix will give you an A or an A-minus, or Hulu will give you a B-plus. And that's fine. And that was actually glorious maybe 10 years ago, but now we have higher expectations. And I feel like in 2018, I've reached the point where I don't know what caused the sense of freedom, but I have been liberated, people. I'm here to tell you that I no longer fret so much about what I'm missing, because I've given into it. You know, quick example, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I know it's allegedly one of the great, great comedies on TV right now. I finally, maybe a month ago, watched the first episode. It was great. It's really well written, really funny. I may not watch any more because there's a lot of other TV that I want to sample and check out and then feel connected to. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm not crying over that. I'm free, people. I'm free.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly how I've been feeling about a lot of shows. It's like, I want to watch this and this, and I have a list, and oh, everyone's like, you got to watch this and you've got to watch that. And I'm like, and I might do the same exact thing. I might check out one episode, but then go back to some of the other programs that I like am obsessed with. And it's okay. I have to like tell myself it's okay.
But listen, I've still watched scores of shows. Can we say scores of shows this year? And out of the, I've chosen, less than 10 as my absolute favorite shows of the year. So so there we go. It's the creme de la creme. And my first pick is, and this might be a surprise, Daredevil Season 3 on Netflix. I'm going to say that Daredevil Season 3 is the best season of any Marvel next Netflix show. Better than Luke Cage Season 1, better than Daredevil Season 1, better than Jessica Jones Season 1. Shout out to showrunner Eric Olson. I feel like I see you, Eric Olson, watching David Simon, watching Martin Scorsese, because those influences are really on point in Season 3. But the reason why I like Season 3 is because it took classic stories from the comics and it made it feel really believable and real. Amita, it was such a grim, grim, grim season, at least the beginning of it. And all the characters wrestled with really heavy issues like morality and faith and forgiveness. But ultimately, it was about hope. And like the one thing that I took away from Daredevil Season 3 is that like every single character in a really interesting way needed redemption. And the neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen needed redemption. And the city of New York did. And without giving spoilers, you actually have hope that things can turn around. So I'm actually having hope for our country, the United States of America, thanks to Daredevil Season 3. Like, if Daredevil and Hell's Kitchen can turn around after how that season began, maybe we'll just survive the travesty that we're going through right now. So that's my first choice. Coming up in no particular order, Killing Eve. I know it's a show that you share on your list as well. And so many things to say about the show. So much has been written about the show. So I just want to shout out how well and interestingly they cover sexuality on the show, right? Like, there's an interesting tension between Eve and Villanelle. Like, there are older characters that have sexual lives. One of her coworkers is bisexual. So I just feel like in the way that nothing is black and white in the show, neither is sexuality. And that just is just one additional layer of why it was just such an interesting show. Sandra Oh playing a low-level agent who starts tracking down the serial killer. Just so much that goes on in the show. And for me, the way the sexuality is explored is the most, one of the most interesting things about it.
I love that take about the show. I was obsessed with the show when it came out, and I'm so glad you watched it. And I have to say, I really love these two leading ladies, this cat and mouse game. You know, when I was thinking about my thoughts for this series, I was like, it was a delicate, deceptive dance between the two of them. And every time they caught up with each other, I was on the edge of my seat. And kudos to Phoebe Waller-Bridge's. She is masterful at creating those moments where you think that Sandra Oh's character is caught up with this serial killer and that it's going to end, but there's a left turn, there's a curveball, there's an emotional moment, there's a hesitation, and it just so thrilling every step of the way, which is why this show, I think, has gotten so much buzz and, you know, has gotten the acclaim that it has, because it's really a thrill ride.
Yeah, and this isn't a spoiler because they show it in commercials and previews, but I was actually very happy that you see these two antagonists physically meet each other. You don't have to wait till the end of the season for it to happen. It happens relatively early on, and that's very satisfying as a viewer. I mean, there's such a progression in every episode, and that's a really satisfying thing as a viewer. So it was just done so well. The humor was on point. You feel for all the characters. It was really funny. So I love that we both share that show. It's great. I can't wait for season two whenever that comes. I think we're going to have to wait a little while for it'll be worth the wait, I'm sure.
Yes, definitely. Another pick that I have is a reboot, which meant a lot to me. Murphy Brown, the 80s sitcom, came back for 13 episodes. We're still finishing up the last few episodes right now. And I was a huge fan of the show growing up. I think it is probably one of the influences for me to study broadcast journalism, actually. And I was really, really hyped for it to come back and to see a modern Murphy Brown in the world that we live in right now. And they do an incredible job of touching upon relevant topics. They do not hold back on Trump, which I think is really awesome. And they did episodes about immigration and midterms, and it's super sharp. It's thought provoking, which was I think super special about the first iteration of the show. And I think they took chances to like update with newer characters, but they didn't lose its defiance and its integrity. And side note, they added an Indian character, and I obviously was super excited about that. His name is Pat Patel, no relation, and he is played wonderfully by the actor Nick Dodani, and he fills this stereotype of like an IT tech social media guru guy behind the scenes of the cable show. But what I love and I think was super refreshing is that they actually, his character is gay. And that made me extremely happy, because that is actually not something that is very common in the Indian culture, to have homosexual men and women be out and proud. And it was not even a second, you know, guess. There wasn't a whole talk about it. It's just his character. And I really appreciated that.
Right on. Okay. I'm living in a world where there's a queer Indian dude on TV.
Hell yeah.
I'm happy. Happier. Let's not say happy, but I'm happier. That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. I want to say that Murphy Brown is a show I have not watched, but it is on my list of shows that I do want to get around to. So that the fact that it's on your list, Amita, has helped it to rise higher on my to-do
good,
list.
Good. I'm glad. And in another world that is completely different than Murphy Brown, another choice of mine is Atlanta. You guys have heard me gush about this show this year and last year. It was one of my top picks last year. And I love Donald Glover. I love his creative genius. And this series raised the bar in season two. They continue to create topical, subversive, insightful, enlightening episodes. And the only thing I need to say is Teddy Perkins. What a feat of craft and creativity. It is a creepy episode. They showed it without any commercial breaks, and that helped this episode feel like such a short film. And it gives me chills thinking about that character and everything that happened in that episode. And I think what I love about the series, there's so many other episodes I want to kind of dive into, but we don't need to do that. I think you guys know how much I love the show and you should just watch it. But what I do think is that there's TV shows that I can watch and enjoy and process on my own, right? You can watch an episode of Game of Thrones or, you know, even Killing Eve and just be like, all right, this is great. I enjoy it. I, you know, I'm obsessed with these characters and these storylines. Atlanta is a rare series that I need to read every article, like find out all the themes and dive deeper into how these episodes were created. I love that. I want to learn more about how these shows were put together. And that's the genius of the series, I think.
Right on, right on. Again, another series I want to watch but have not yet watched. I'm not fretting, as I said before, but at some point I will watch it, and I'm sure I will enjoy the genius that you and millions of other people.
And you watched season one finally, right?
Yeah, I've definitely watched most of season one.
Okay.
Donald Glover has just unsubscribed to our
Donald,
podcast.
Please.
Sorry, I'm here. Gambino.
I'm here for you,
sorry,
Donald.
About that. It's a lot of TV. It's a lot of TV. All right. Well, next on my list, you've got a twofer, and it's going to get scary. So hold on to your petticoat. I want to talk about two of my favorite series that both happen to be in the horror genre. I'm talking about Haunting of Hill House, no one's surprised, and Castle Rock. So I feel like for 2 years running, horror has been the genre that feels in a way most vital. Guess what, Amita? We're living a horror movie, if you didn't realize it. you're Jamie Lee Curtis, I'm Jamie Lee Curtis, we're all Jamie Lee Curtis running and trying to save ourselves. Anyway, you get back on target. It's a nightmare. But yeah, so it doesn't surprise me then that, like, from Get Out to It to Hereditary, there's been so many great horror films, Halloween, and audiences are responding. Also on television. So I feel like Haunting of Hill House and Castle Rock, in my opinion, are game changers. They take the horror genre and then, in the best way possible, make it about more than just horror. So, like, Haunting of Hill House is about family dysfunction, reckoning with the past, and being unsure about the future. Castle Rock is about family dysfunction, reckoning with the past, and being unsure about the future. They both cover really deep things, similar things, when I started thinking about it. And then both shows made me scream out loud like a crazy person. And then they made me cry and they made me think a lot. And both were almost perfect because as much as I loved the entire season, both finales failed to deliver, in my humble opinion.
Really? Wow. Yeah. So how do you define fail? Like, is it failed because it wasn't what you expected or wanted for the series, or is it failed because they, like, took a left turn that you didn't think was appropriate or didn't think it worked?
I think it's so interesting to me how both of them had such similar strengths and this one weakness, which is I think that they both spent too much time in their final episode trying to explain things. And I think that in both cases, Castle Rock and Haunting of Hill House, they created mysteries that needed to be solved. And you know how I feel about that, Amit. I'm a little bit weary. Like, you can tell a story that doesn't necessarily have to have a mystery. I'm blaming Lost for this. Right? Like, you can tell a good story, and, like, there doesn't have to be a mystery that needs to be solved. But both Castle Rock and Haunting of Hill House decided to do that. And up until the end, I was in it. I was like, yep, please explain why this guy is in Castle Rock and why bad things are happening. Okay, in Haunting of Hill House, we saw the Red Room from episode one. All right, so you'll eventually explain what the Red Room is. I think in both cases, they made the mystery a little bit too important. And then when it was explained, I think in the case of Castle Rock, they intended it to be ambiguous. And that ambiguity just felt a little unsatisfying.
Hmm.
I think everything else felt so solid about Castle Rock that then to have an ambiguous ending wasn't satisfying, because Stephen King doesn't do that. I think when Stephen King ends a novel, when you've read 1,200 pages of The Stand or 1,100 pages of, you know, It, you're satisfied at the end, right? You're not being like, well, was that really evil or was it man-made? Like, no, you know. And with Haunting of Hill House, I think that the ending that they created just didn't live up to everything else. It wasn't that it was ambiguous. It was just not as well crafted. And I know that I'm not alone in feeling that. So, but I will say this, my love of those shows, I love them both so hard that, the weaker endings don't make me love them any less, honestly.
That is really interesting. So the whole thing was really interesting to me. I the ending of a show can complete the show, right? And so the fact that you had such a hard time with the endings of a show and it still made these lists is very interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it might seem counterintuitive, but, you know, there were moments of Castle Rock. I mean, first of all, Sissy Spacek is glorious. And there's an episode that's really all about, she has dementia, and that episode really covers the horror of what it's like to have dementia. You see the episode through her eyes. It's so well performed. It's such a big, bold move, and it's so well shot. The visual element they choose to really convey what's possibly real and what's from her vision is so smart. Like that, that's just so brilliant that I forgive some weaknesses.
I get it.
You know, like, you know, yeah, yeah. And then, and same thing with Haunting of Hill House. I literally screamed out loud. I'm not exaggerating. And so it gave me such fright. It gave me such emotions, you know, the horror of having a sibling who's addicted to drugs. I haven't seen that as well presented on any other show than I have on Haunting of Hill House. Just so well done. So because it did that so well, I forgive it for losing it a little bit at the end.
I have only heard incredible things about how terrifying Haunting of Hill House is. And so what I think is super interesting is how you just described it as, you know, dealing with a sibling with addiction. And I never heard that description before. And it makes me intrigued to maybe even attempt to watch it. Although I don't know if I could ever do that because I think I need to like have somebody to like grab onto.
You really do. I told you when I was in LA, I watched the first four episodes in my hotel room and trauma. Like, I still have trauma from that time. It was a lot to deal with. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we should actually have a whole other conversation about horror because we know the listeners know that you don't really like horror, but we've never really gotten into why you don't like it and also the exceptions you make because I know you mm-hmm. went to Seek It Out. So that's a whole other conversation.
But yeah, we should definitely talk about that
in a future
episode. I do make exceptions.
Well, and your next pick, one could actually describe as horror.
I mean, yes, this next pick of mine this season has elements of horror for sure. I think it's more suspense and dysfunction and despair. It is my top pick from last year. It is Handmaid's Tale season 2. And oh man, they raised the bar with this season. And I think it is hard for me to encapsulate everything I feel about the season. And I know a lot of people have a lot of feelings about how dark the show is and how, you know, torture porn has been thrown around as a terminology to describe the series. But they think that when somebody says that to me, I'm like, but the show is so masterfully done, from the music cues to the dialogue to the acting alone. And then there's this other level of visual excellence. I don't know how else to describe it. The cinematography and some of just, you know, the colors and the world that they created is just incredible. And there's only one episode that I keep telling everybody about when they watch the series. I was like, did you get to episode 11? Episode 11 is called Holly. And this episode features only Emmy winner Elizabeth Moss. And she is in an extremely dire situation. And aside from just a couple of flashbacks, she's the only person on screen. She is the only person in an empty house and has barely any dialogue because she is alone. It is a masterclass in acting because it is all about her facial expression. It's all about the trauma and the angst and the struggle she is going through. And it just, I mean, I'm thinking about it again and it's like a gut punch of just raw, you know, talent that she has, and what she delivers in that episode is masterful.
Well, my next pick is also in many ways about women and their struggles. Definitely not as dark, and there's a lot of comedy here. It's Glow season 2 on Netflix, and I have to thank Chris, my husband, because I don't think I would have watched it, but he really got into it, and I was like, well, let me check this out. And I zoomed through season 1 and then started to savor season 2, and it's great. You know, I think I wasn't racing to see it because I just thought that the premise was limiting. Okay, it's a show about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling based on a true story, really set almost entirely in their world of wrestling. And I was like, well, how far can that go? How many stories can you tell? How much can you actually learn about the characters? And the answer is a lot. You care about these characters so much. The show just does a great job of blending humor and sentimentality and action, right? It's like, it's really fun to watch these women become good professional wrestlers. And one of the things that I love about it is that Alison Brie, who I've loved ever since Mad Men, and Mark Maron's great, and then Betty Gilpin, who I watched the entire season 1 and 2, and I didn't realize that she was on Nurse Jackie.
Oh, yeah.
And was amazing on Nurse Jackie. I didn't realize it was the same character. She's that good. So shout out to all of those actors and all of the, I think there are 11 women in leading roles. So you've got to love that they've got these really interesting characters and that it's a relatively diverse cast. I mean, I just mentioned white people there, but there are some of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling are black, and there's a woman who's South. I think she's a Pacific Island, and there's Latina. So yeah, it's pretty diverse, and it's just entertaining. It's well done.
I've heard so many people rave about this show, and I had the same thought as you. Like, is it just gorgeous ladies of wrestling? Like, these women are wrestling, and it's going to be, you know, fun and dramatic, and what else is there? And so I never, it's on the list of, I'm going to try to watch that at some point. So I think you're making me move it up the list for sure.
Yeah, it's worth checking out. Like, again, I don't ask anyone to commit to more than the first episode, but yeah, check out the pilot. The pilot's pretty good. I think the pilot draws you in. But if it doesn't, then yeah, the show's probably not for you. So definitely check out Glow if you have the time.
I don't know if I do.
And just because Netflix is ruling our lives, my next pick is also Netflix. It's also a season 2 series from Netflix that doesn't get the promotion I think that other Netflix shows get. I'm talking about Dear White People by the creator, Justin Simien, who I just want to thank so much for creating a series that I think makes the definitive statement about what it's like to be young, gifted, and black in America in 2018. But also what it means to be American. The season was emotional and scary and troubling. And at the same time, it did what a season 2 needs to do. You got to know the characters better. They surprised you while still staying who they were introduced to be in season 1. It presented new storylines and new obstacles and just kind of progressed things in a really deep way. Love Dear White People. So happy that they're filming season 3 as we speak.
Yes.
Right now.
This is on my list as well. We didn't get to discuss this, but it is on my list. I enjoyed the show. And there's one episode in particular that I thought was really well done. And I think it's episode 8. And they shot it like a play. And it's mostly just two of the main characters. And I thought it was really, really well done. I happened to go to an event in LA when I was out there with the entire cast and Justin Simien and Yvette Lee Bowser. And they showed this episode along with the following one and discussed how they really crafted it like a play and how it was, you know, rehearsed and blocked to like really have that movement and get down to the nitty gritty of this conflict between these two characters. And I just loved that episode so much. It's just such a well done series.
Yeah. And I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, these characters are so pleased with how smart they are. And I don't know why it annoyed me a little bit. And then I don't know what it took, but then I think I realized, oh, wait a second, Sean, you actually love that. You know, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, those kids spoke in a wittier way than any high school student ever did. You know, it's that kind of Shonda Rhimes, mm-hmm. Joss Whedon, hyper articulate, self aware, 8 steps ahead dialogue, which I really love. And I think Justin Simien, welcome to that club, Justin Simien, Joss yes. Whedon and Shonda Rhimes. I hope you would be happy to be in part of that club. He does it, but in his own distinct way. So it's just like, there's no better dialogue on TV, I'll say.
It really isn't. It's refreshing to watch that show and just be like, oh, wow, okay, I got to keep up. Like, I really need to listen and absorb everything they're saying because I'm getting an education as well.
Yeah, yeah. One of my last picks is, believe it or not, a network show.
What?
And like Dear White People, it's about black people. I'm talking about Black-ish. And guess what? I'm going to begin my comment on Black-ish with what sounds like shade. Black-ish is corny Collins. That show is so... allows itself to be really corny. And I've realized just recently that's why I love it. That Prince episode completely helped me to understand that, Sean, you love Black-ish because it's willing to be sweet and sentimental and corny with a capital C. It's just, and I think the reason why I allow it to be earnest, or it earns its earnest moments, because the writing is so great and the performances are just stellar. So, you know, does the idea of a family spontaneously singing Nothing Compares to You make my eyes roll a little bit, Amita? Yes. But have I watched that scene 3 times wishing it were my own family? I'm not saying.
I bet you would. I bet you would. Oh.
Did you watch the Prince episode?
This is one of the shows that...
Okay. Get away from me.
You haven't even told me that there was a Prince episode, and you are the man that watches Black-ish and tells me about it because I don't watch the show. So you failed.
Okay. I am really not judgmental right now. I mean, it was the 100th episode of Black-ish. There were a gazillion promos, and it was a complete episode devoted to Prince. Again... fun and reverential, a little corny, but just great. So cheers to you, Black-ish. Hopefully the fact that your showrunner is leaving ABC and going to Netflix won't affect the quality of the show. So I'm really cherishing this season because I'm not sure what the future of Black-ish is going to be. And so far it's not disappointing. Great season of Black-ish.
I have a question about this show. It's what, season 4 we're in now? Or 5?
Season 4
okay.
or 5,
Do you see it ending anytime soon? Because I know, like, you know, there's a statute of limitations on all shows, sitcoms, and dramas. And
Will you tell that to Modern Family? I know they haven't heard that.
No,
they
isn't this season the last season? Oh, gosh. I'm even asking the question.
It's
terrible.
I'll definitely watch the final episode of Modern Family. Do I see it ending? Yes. Although I will say this, that across the board, the child stars are aging much better than I've seen a lot of other child stars age. They're all maintaining their acting ability, and none of them are getting ugly. Sorry to be harsh, but I'm not going to mention any names, but we all know the child stars that got ugly. Let's say less cute. But all those Black-ish stars are not doing that. So, yeah, I mean, but at some point it will end.
All right.
And you know me, I'll be fine. Like, I'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I feel like I feel like it's a point where you feel, usually at this point, 4 or 5 seasons are like, okay, I think it's time, because you want to not draw it out, right? You want to end on a good note and end on a high note and not belabor.
Exactly. Give me 5 seasons.
Exactly.
I'm good.
All right. Just checking on how you're feeling about that. How did you take that temperature?
Thank you. What about you? What's your next pick?
Well, it's now back to Netflix Central. And, you all have heard me discuss this show. And if you haven't, go back and listen to our episodes about it. In as we have discussed, a very dark and troubling world. Things get you down. And Queer Eye gave me joy. Gave everybody much needed joy, good-hearted fun, a huge dose of acceptance and love. It is everything the world needs right now. It gave me all the feels. The casting of those Fab Five is spot on. They all added such an incredible element, and they were also very vulnerable in their own way. And you learn about them while you learn about the people they're making over. And I thought it was just brilliant. And I can't wait for season 3, which I think is supposed to be coming out in early next year. But if you haven't watched the first 2 seasons, I highly recommend that you do it. It will make you laugh. It'll make you cry. And I think it just makes you feel good. And we all need that.
Well, why don't we just stay with Netflix, because it's Netflix. And this is my final selection. Nobody who's listened to this show is going to be surprised. All good things must come to an end. All great things must come to an end. What will go down as one of my favorite TV shows of all time came to an end this year. We're talking about Sense8. And listen, was the show always perfect? No. Was the finale perfect? No. I would have loved to have had some more time to conclude individual storylines, right? Because again, like, there was so much set up and like they created this whole world, and then they had two hours, 20 minutes to sum everything up. So, and a lot of the stuff felt slightly rushed, but I bow down to Lana Wachowski because she did create this world and these eight amazing characters who you cared so much about, and just like this, a brilliant mythology that you got to geek out to, and just like I think like the most queer positive show on television that you got to celebrate. And so the finale was for the fans, Amita. Like at the end of it, it says for the fans.
Aww.
And for example, we've all talked about it everywhere. If you know one thing about Sense8, you know is that they have these amazing they have amazing orgy scenes. So yes, we got an orgy scene at the very end of the series finale. But Amita, I want you to get your mind out of the gutter, because it wasn't just about the orgy. I really do. Don't roll your eyes, because I do
never heard that phrase
that
before.
I truly believe deep in my soul and in other parts of my body that this orgy, for me, like, I've never seen a better statement about the need for empathy, about the need for opening oneself up to new possibilities, and for the importance of being really flexible. Because when you're in an orgy, you really need, like, your back needs to...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to be flexible in many ways.
So, Sense8. Oh, here. Last time you'll hear me talk about Sense8 ever on this podcast, because it's over. And I know we're all shedding a tear about that, but I appreciate everyone allowing me to go on and on about it over these past 3 years, because I never had anyone else to talk about it to. So I appreciate the listeners.
I mean, I obviously listened to you, but I wasn't able to participate. And this won't be the last time you mention the show. I don't want you to feel like you could never mention the show again, because I think it will come up at some point as a reference, you know, or something. So I want you to feel open and, you know, able to do that.
Your statement and also the show Sense8 has made me feel open to all those possibilities.
Good.
So thank you, Amita. And thank you, Lana Wachowski. Both of you could be in my Sense8.
Oh my God. Oh, you're going to make me cry.
My cluster. All right. So you have one more pick for TV. What is your final best of TV?
Well, HBO has made a play in this list, and it is the dark comedy Barry. A friend of mine highly recommended it, and I checked it out this summer, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised. What a really wonderful effort from Bill Hader. He wrote and directed a number of the episodes. He stars in the show, you know, won a couple of Emmys, and it's such an interesting world that they created, and it's a combination of like an existential crisis of a hitman through the, you know, in the backdrop of Hollywood glitz and glam, and it makes it just for fun and awkward and but also tense and sometimes touching moments. And you know, there's a couple episodes directed by the uber talented Hiro Murai, who I love his work on Atlanta, so those episodes definitely shine for me. But you know, I love this first season of Barry, and they leave it in a place where I cannot wait to see what happens next, and I love that too.
Also on my list of shows that I would love to have the time to watch. But yeah, I've heard nothing but great things, and Bill Hader just seems like one of the people you want to have success, right? He's so talented, and I love when comics are able to go from being comics to dramatic actors, although I guess there's comedy in Barry as well. So
yeah, I think there's an earnestness to the show, And the show's, I think they're half hour episodes and there's only, I think, eight. So it's an easy watch. So if there's something you want to maybe consume faster, I would say put this near the top of the list.
Well, Amita, who are we kidding? Next year, 2019, it's going to be Game of Thrones. So let's just record that right now. Let's record our best of TV right now. Game of Thrones, it was awesome. Oh my God, those dragons. Okay. but what a year of TV. It's been great, overwhelming, but amazing. And we've still got a whole other best of list for you guys. We're going to be back after this short message with our favorite music of 2018.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is time for us to talk about our favorite albums of 2018. Sean, there was so much variety in music this year. Is there any way that you want to maybe sum up music in 2018?
I think it's hard. This year is hard. My first instinct is to say good, but not as good as 2016, which is really one of my favorite years of music in a decade. But my cheat is saying variety, right? I guess that's easy to say, but I think that there was so much. I was going to say it's the year of the woman in music, but I found that actually there are a decent number of men on my list as well. And really, for me, every year is the year of women in music because I just love so many female singers. So honestly, I'm going to say that I don't have a way to sum up the year. It's just, I feel like it's been all over the place, right? Like in a year where you've got like Migos and Taylor Swift and everything else. It's, but that's good, I think. I'm feeling positive about music 2018.
I agree. I am too. I think there's, like you said, a variety, which is the spice of life, guys. So let's dive into it because I think there's a lot of great variety on our list. And we have to start with something that may not be a surprise to all of you listeners. Dirty Computer by the incredibly talented Janelle Monáe. Oh my gosh. I mean, you all know, if you know us, you know how much we were highly anticipating this album, and it delivered on so many levels. I it's hard for me to pick one thing about this album that I loved because every song had its own feeling and meaning to me. I think it was a great cohesive album. And I mean, we can talk about the visual album, but I feel like we're going to stick to the music and we'll stick to that.
Yeah, I think that there's so much to say about this album. The one thing I'll say is that I think coming out helped her to make this great album, right? I think when you're when you're open and you're free and you're not hiding anything, and maybe you can use a certain pronoun that you were that you weren't allowing yourself to use before, or you could say things more directly, that just makes for better music, right? More truthful storytelling. And not everything is about her being queer. I mean, she sings and raps about being black and being a woman. And I think she just hit so many amazing truths. Like, there's this rap in Crazy Classic Life where, like, I interpret it as talking about a young black kid maybe in an all or mostly white private school. And she's feeling like, you know, Black Waldo. And like the first time I heard those lyrics, I was like, oh, you've nailed it. Like, you nailed what it's like being a person of color in a predominantly white environment, wanting to fit in, but trying to maintain your identity. And like, you do that in just like two verses, but like the whole album is filled with moments like that. So I think it's my favorite album of the year. I had so high expectations because I've been a fandroid since day one.
Same.
First album, first EP.
Same.
So So I had such high expectations. After Electric Lady, come on. Ugh. What were you going to do to follow that up?
I know.
But she did. She did.
She did, and she knocked it out of the park. There's so many highlights on this thing. I mean, just Crazy Classic Life. Like, even just you saying it makes me hum it and makes me love that song. And it's such a great beginning to this album. And then Django Jane, the lyrics on that were incredible. So thank you, Janelle. Thank you so, so much. We also were privileged to see her twice this year, which was a gift. And she's an incredible performer as well.
And she's got champagne in her chalice.
Cue the violins and the violas.
Let's keep talking about amazing, beautiful, talented Black women. Angelique Kidjo, I mentioned her before on an earlier episode. I should have looked this up, but she has some title like Aretha Franklin had, Queen of Soul. I mean, she's the queen of African pop soul music. Amazing African artist. She's been in the game for years, and she did a cover this year of one of Talking Heads' seminal albums called Remain in Light. And Talking Heads had writer's block. They were trying to write their new album, and David Byrne and the rest of the band called on a lot of African influences, and their album, you can hear it in their Remain in Light. And so Angelique Kidjo is like, you know, with love and respect and creativity and playfulness, I'm going to cover your album. You know what? Call it appropriation or call it homage, or inspiration. But she's like, yeah, you were inspired by the country, by the music of my country. Now I'm going to like pay homage back to you and like just have a dialogue. And this album is so amazingly produced, and no song sounds exactly like the original version, but you hear the original version. I have this playlist on my Spotify Amita where I think I just call it Remain in Light times two, but it's basically the Talking Head song, then her song, Talking Head song, then her song. And I can listen to that thing all the way through because the songs are so different that it doesn't sound repetitious.
Wow. I remember listening to just the one track you asked me to listen to in our big cell, but I did not get to listen to the entire album. So I'm going to do that because I love what you've just described. What else is on your list of best albums?
My boy, Jacob Banks.
He
released his album called Village, and I love it. We saw him at Afropunk. He has such an amazing voice, and the thing that I most love about Village, the new album, is that he's also showing himself to be a growing songwriter, of growing skill. Because I felt like, oh, in some of his earlier songs, like I heard the song, I was like, I love this song. Lyrics are good, but on this album, I'm hearing lyrics that are great. And I think he got a good producer, and he's also probably, you know, just growing in confidence because he's young. I just love it. It's great soulful ballads. Like, there are some songs that have a sense of humor and playfulness, some upbeat stuff. So I'm all in. Jacob Banks.
I love it. There's a track called Be Good to Me with another big sell artist that I sold to you, Sinabuse, which I thought was beautiful. I love that song.
He's awesome. What about you? Let's hear one of your favorite albums of 2018.
Well, I believe we probably share this as well. We also discussed this when it was released in the spring. Ventriloquism from the exquisite Michelle Ndegeocello. This was a covers album that was an incredible selection of songs that are predominantly from the 80s and 90s. And what interpretation she did of songs like Tender Love and Don't Disturb This Groove and Waterfalls. Those are some of the highlights that I had from this. And, you know, anytime I even actually hear the originals, it makes me want to go back to listen to her versions of them. I heard Don't Disturb This Groove one day on the radio while I was in LA, and I was just like, oh, I have to go listen to Michelle again, because she just did a wonderful job of interpreting these songs and putting her own flavor on them. And it made me really fall in love with this album.
I agree. She made them her own. And I love that she respects the songs.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no kind of like wink, wink, ooh, look at the song from the 80s. No, she respects the artist and she respects the song. You can hear it. She just gives a song like sensitivity, right? She's like, okay, let me interpret that. And she just does something new to it. And she respects the original and creates her own version. It's a long experience. So listen to this album from start to finish. It's a long album, but it's so well done. I mean, she's a master.
Yeah, she's what a treasure. I love her and I love this album. Please listen to this if you haven't.
Yeah, it's great. It's really so well done.
What is next on your list?
I think we've discussed her before. Florence and the Machine, High as Hope. It's such a great album. I will say that there's not a better lyricist working in pop music today. I'm just in love with her lyrics. I feel like she is the daughter of, I feel like Annie Lennox and Joni Mitchell and Patti Smith and Chrissy Hynde all stood around a cauldron and like molded her from clay. They all, like, she is just this, yeah, she's this creation. She came out of the cauldron twirling because Florence loves to twirl. And here she is giving us a great album, Highest Hope. I really love it. And I love the lyrics. I love just like catching something new every time I listen to it. And then I'll look up the lyrics if I can't hear it or understand it. And I'm like, oh, it's poetry. You just wrote another great poem. And just musically, she's great in her voice. She's just effortlessly a great singer. She just hits these crazy notes and just keeps twirling. So I love it. I really love High as Hope. And a little shout out to my very good friend Christine, who convinced me that I needed to give her a try, because I used to just make fun of Florence for being a banshee. And I'm here to say, people, if there's someone that you don't like or you don't take serious, it's worth giving them a second chance if you know of other people who respect them and like them.
Oh, look at that.
It's a little more. Good. Yeah, a little morality tale in this best of. So there you go.
I need that little star that's like, the more you know. Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. Exactly. What about you? What's your next pick? Best album of 2018?
My next pick is actually a very recent release. It is the latest album from the rapper Meek Mill. It's called Championships. It actually just came out a little while ago on November 30th. And Meek Mill, if you don't know, is a rapper who's been in the game for a little while now, for a good, I would say, 7-8 years. And most people may recognize the name because he is going through a very public issue with criminal justice reform. And he's become the face, honestly, of criminal justice reform. And he pours so much emotion into his music and his lyrics. And he recently, unfortunately, was sent back to jail on a technical probation violation and came out of jail this spring. And this is the album that he worked on, you know, all summer and released. And there are such incredible, powerful lyrics, difficult truths that he tells in these songs. And it is a championship for him, frankly. He really, really brought it with this album. And I highly recommend you listen to it. Musically, he did some really cool things, some sampling collabs with Cardi B. It's a really great track with two of his mentors, Jay-Z and Rick Ross, called What's Free, which is an incredible social forecast of what is going on in this world today, the plight of the black man in this system today, which is really powerful. And you know, I think he's somebody who knows how to translate what he's going through and what people around him are going through into his lyrics. And he has this real fiery delivery. And I really do admire this album.
That's great. It's definitely on my list of things to check out. Yeah, it just came out. So I like that it connected with you so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, just side note, I happened to, the reason I went to LA was to work on a project about him. And so I obviously became attached to his music, a lot of his early albums. And so I've been pumping Meek Mill for a while. And so it was, I was highly anticipating this album. So I'm a little biased.
That's great. That's awesome. Cool. So, well, my next pick is Lean On Me by Jose James. We've recently spoken about him, so I'm not going to say anything more, but it's an album of, it's my third album of covers. I just realized that. Who needs originality? No, but this is an original album. It's an album of Bill Withers covers, but it's his great voice plus classic songs plus gorgeous arrangements. What else do you need? Thank you, Jose James, and thank you, Bill Withers.
Ah, what a wonderful. Thank you for giving me this in a big sale. What a wonderful, wonderful album. I'm glad that made your list.
What you got?
I'm going to give it up for Cardi B this year. She's had an incredible year, and Invasion of Privacy, her debut album. I just think it was such a strong debut for her. I think the bar was set high for her to come out. And, you know, she was known as somebody who was a stripper who went to a reality star. And then she's going to try to turn into a rapper. And, you know, I think there were some skeptics out there. And I will say I was one of them. But I think that she came out really well. I think she's making a lot of the right moves. She has a great, unique voice in rap right now. She's unapologetic. She's funny. She's herself. She it's a fun album. I think I also just needed a fun album and some really great tracks to the bangers to dance to and to rap to. And I really enjoyed Invasion of Privacy. Thanks, Cardi B. Of course.
To twerk to alone in your living room?
Yes, exactly. Thank you for letting me tell the listeners that. Yeah.
We want to be honest with our listeners.
Yep. Yeah, mom, I twerk in the living room. Okay.
Yes. Sharing is caring. Thank you, Amita.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, my final pick, best album, one of the best albums of the year, is a posthumous release. And I'm typically morally opposed to posthumous releases. But I approve of this one. Why? Because I like it. So Piano and a Microphone. You may not have heard of this album. You've heard of the artist, Prince. So Paisley Park, his estate, released this. And all this was in 1983. Prince was about to begin rehearsals for the music for Purple Rain. And one night, he probably just gets up, grabs his audio engineer, and he sits down at a piano. He has a cold, and he just tells the audio engineer to record him. He gets recorded on a cassette tape, and this is what he did. And it just shows what a genius he is, Amita. He does everything from a Joni Mitchell cover of A Case of You. You get a little snippet of what Purple Rain is going to turn into. 17 Days, which is going to be one of the great B-sides in music history. And then like a really weird, freaky, what the F is going on inside your mind song called Coffee and Cocaine. It's a notebook. And I don't know, like you might cringe to have your notebook read aloud in front of other people, but I think this is a notebook that was written with really good penmanship, and it's just everything written was just perfect and spot on and beautiful. So I'm happy to have access to this personal notebook of his.
Oh, I'm so glad that you got this little gift this year. It completely was. And I had no doubt that this was going to be on your list. I was like, yeah, that's going to be there.
He's sniffling. He's like, he's got a cold. He's, you know, but it's so good.
Something that's beautiful about the rawness of that, you know, that you're describing.
So Amita, I believe you have one more pick, which I am not surprised about.
I bet you wouldn't be. A late addition to my list is the soundtrack to A Star Is Born, which I loved this film, but I think one of the reasons I truly love this film is the music. The music in this film was incredible. Bradley Cooper is such a talented performer and singer. Obviously, a lot of people didn't know that before this, and I really, really enjoyed his voice. I enjoyed the lyrics of a lot of these songs. I hum some of them. I listened to this soundtrack quite a bit driving in LA the last couple months. There's some really incredible songs on here that are actually just Bradley Cooper songs. There's some really great Lady Gaga songs. There's incredible duets. Shallow, which is the song that was mostly played in all the trailers, is one of the top contenders for best song at the Oscars, I think. And I loved singing that in the car. And I think it was just a really well-crafted soundtrack. But if you didn't know it was a soundtrack, I think it would have just been a well-crafted album too, you know? So kudos to them for all the hard work they put into this film and into this music.
Yeah, there's no way that a song from this album is not going to win Best Song. Even though I don't talk about Oscars until January, like, it's guaranteed. Like, this is going to win Oscars. It's popular and it's quality. So That's a good mixture.
And we'll be back to announce our Song of the Year after this short message.
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne.
And I'm Judge John Hodgman.
If you live on the west coast of North America, we're coming your way.
That's right. Judge John Hodgman is taking justice to the west coast on tour. Starting where?
Vancouver, British Columbia, January 15th, then to Seattle, Washington on the 16th, Portland, Oregon on the 17th, San Francisco, California on the 18th, and Los Angeles, California, the City of Angels, on January 22nd. Tickets are on sale now. You can find links to all of the shows at MaximumFun.org. And if you're going to be in one of those cities and you have a dispute we can try on stage, send it to us. Just go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO or email Hodgman at MaximumFun.org.
I'm ready to judge you on the road. Take that, Jack Kerouac, author of On the Road.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. This is the moment you've all been waiting for, and so have we. We saved the best for last. We decided to, for the first time, discuss our Song of the Year. I want to, like, put a reverb on that.
There have been over 1 trillion songs released and recorded, and we're choosing our favorite. Amita, would you like to go first?
No, you should go first. Seriously, you should go
first. Okay, I'm going to go first. My Song of the Year completely took me by surprise. I thought it would come from one of the artists that you've heard me talk about for the past 30 minutes. But I am choosing Happy Without Me by Chloe and Halle. This song was out for about a month, and I never heard it, or two. And then it was when I was just kind of walking. I think I was going on a hike in L.A. and it popped up in my Spotify. And I just maybe said out loud, and then it echoed, reverberated through the canyon, "What the hell is this? Why is this song so good?" I'm just really floored by the song. Happy Without Me, Chloe and Halle. It is so much of what I like. Great melodies. You know, I'm a sucker for harmony also. Great harmony, right? Whether it's Michael Stipe and Mike Mills or Michael Jackson harmonizing with himself. I just love harmonies, and they harmonize so well together. I love the lyrics, and I love how it takes something that's so tried and true, right? Like in pop music, we've heard this all the time. You broke my heart, you moved on. There have been a million songs written about that. But the twist that they bring to the lyrics, I think, is so smart and probably so true. Because you do feel that, right? Like, you don't really want people to be happy without you, at least not initially. You want to get to that point, you don't want to hold on to things. But I was just like, oh, that's such a true emotion that's sung so beautifully. And I love that kind of like bitter emotion with the sweet voices. That kind of dichotomy, I think, is so cool. It's so well produced. And I love that it just took me by surprise. I love that I had no idea who they were. I wasn't anticipating it, and it just came from musical heaven and descended on me. And I've listened to that song so many times and don't get sick of it. Song of the year, Happy Without Me.
I love that. I love them. Chloe and Halle are really bright, young, talented women, and I love their album. So I love it. This is your song of the year, Choi.
It's crazy. I'm flabbergasted.
Well, I'm going to follow this up with a song, and I think maybe not a lot of people were maybe familiar with Happy Without Me or Chloe and Halle. So my choice might be a little bit more familiar, but my song of the year is a very popular song that has been all over the radio. It's called Boot Up by Ella May. And this is a song that has this amazing throwback feel. It feels like it's a classic R&B song from like the 90s, and it's a British artist from now. And I, anytime it's just like a new classic, anytime it comes on, like everybody in the room is just swaying and dancing and loving this song. It's such a great, great track. And I can't help but love this song every time it comes on the radio. I can't get tired of it. And I think that's a really great barometer for a really great song. And her album came out as well. And her album follows suit with some really songs that have, they feel like they were lived in already. And I love the vibe of the album and some of the collaborations she had on there. So Ella May, Boot Up is my choice.
Ooh, does that song make you twerk?
No, it's not. Oh. It's like this great, you know, mid-low tempo song. Yeah, it's great.
Okay. Well, listen, we are going to put these songs in our show notes. And we're going to have actually a pretty extensive show notes for this episode. So we'll have all of our lists in the show notes and maybe some bonus content too, because we couldn't actually get to everything in the hour we are allotted. But yeah, so make sure to visit our show notes. You can find them at insidepoppodcast.com, and you'll get links to a lot of the music we're talking about. And I think that could be a really fun thing to listen to after you've listened to our show.
I totally agree. And that is it. That's it for us this week. Please stay in touch with us, as you know, Twitter, Instagram, at Pop Insiders, like us on Facebook, and go to our official website, InsidePopPodcast.com, to subscribe.
And you can also find us on the Maximum Fun Network at MaxFun.org.
And if you are feeling our best of list this week, well, in 2 weeks, you're going to get another one. We are going to do our best movies of 2018 list. We're going to put a little spin on it. I think we're going to talk about some performances, some scenes. Please come back in a couple weeks to hear our picks for the best films of 2018.
You've just got to live like a person. How does that feel? Yeah, Buffy. What are we going to do now?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.